Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Craig Ferguson comes in here and is a tour de force. I always had thoughts about Craig Ferguson being interesting, but I didn't know how interesting he was going to be. So very revealing and interesting interview with Craig Ferguson coming up. News as well. First, LifeLock, 83% plan to shop online this holiday year. Seems like it's even more than that. But FBI got nearly 300,000 online theft complaints in 2017. Before you click the buy button, remember, some websites are created by people who just want credit card data and other personal information. Don't let it happen to you. It's important to understand how cybercrime is affecting our lives. Identity theft is a serious issue. Don't get caught up in it. It's almost 2020. You have to protect yourself. You're online all the time. It's convenient. It's fast. It's efficient, but you're vulnerable. So let's get some LifeLock. Identity, someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds, and you could miss threats if you're just monitoring your credit. Get LifeLock. They have a wide range of ways to detect threats to your identity on the internet. It is LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com for up to 25% off.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
Yeah, you heard Dick. It's time for month 8 of Adam's Monthly Nut. December shipment includes a Pinot Protector wine condom. We at Corolla Drinks practice safe drinking. A man show beer stein commemorating a great TV show and a time less woke. You'll also get 3 samples of super fat keto nut butters to stave off the need for a burrito at lunch. Of course, a bottle of Mangria or 33 wines and a shrimp diviner. The perfect gift to show someone just how much you love them. The $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut.
My boss at the time was a guy who has the most Scottish name I have ever heard of in my life. His name was, and I'm not kidding, Willie Macbeth. Isn't that I'm Scottish, I think that's a bit too Scottish. Willie Macbeth. Sounds like a Shakespearean porn site. Willie Macbeth. There's got to be other ones, hang on. Penis Hamlet, obviously. Romy Ho and Julie Wet. A Midsummer Night's Cream. Fuck you.
Craig Ferguson on the Adam Carolla Show.
Craig is a guy I'm very interested in talking to.
I have to say, Adam, I'm a bit worried because I heard you say that a couple of times, Gwen, and you say a little bit like a Nazi doctor. Like you say, Craig is someone I am very interested in talking to. And I'm like, what? Why are you so interested?
Christoph
Waltz. Yeah. You know, I knew of you back in the day with the Late Late Show, and I was in the running to do that back in the day, and so I was aware of you, and then I remember thinking at the time, wait, this guy was Drew Carey's boss. Like, this guy's an actor guy from TV. What's he doing hosting a late night show? And then I started seeing you on Jay Leno's Garage recently and been watching your stand-up specials and stuff, and I thought, there's a lot going on with this guy, a lot more than I thought. And then there's kind of a dark side and a got sober side and considered suicide side.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought there's a lot more going on with Craig than I'd initially thought.
Well, I think that you weren't alone in thinking, when I got that job in late night, I think there was a lot of people going, what the hell's going on? But I have to tell you, this is kind of embarrassing because my first job when I came to Hollywood, I did rewrite work on movies. I was a writer. And I did script work on Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, now we're talking.
I wrote that scene.
Oh, I knew it.
Wouldn't it be great if that was true? Wouldn't that be fantastic? Like, I was thinking, oh, I really wish I'd written. That's the only time in my life I wish I'd written that scene, but I wish I'd written that scene just so I could shame you.
Oh, God, that would have been the greatest moment of my life. Or maybe there would just be a puff of smoke and a pile of dust, like in Spinal Tap, like what used to happen to their drummers. Hobo Fabulous is a funny six-part series. It's stand-up, and it's behind the scenes, and it's on the road. And I was watching last night, and it was figuring out you have the 3x5 cards with the jokes on them, and you're trying to kind of map out. I've been there a million times with the buck slips and the jokes and the order and what are we going to do. And it's a very interesting process. It boils down to – how much stuff would you like to work on versus how much stuff do you know? And if you do the stuff you know, it's great, but you don't learn any more new stuff and you don't test new stuff. You go out and do a bunch of new stuff, then you're putting yourself in jeopardy.
Right.
Because we don't know. This was the David Bowie joke.
The David Bowie joke that's in the special was, it's like, I know you must have this. Every comic I know has this. There's that I have a joke that I like that audiences don't share my opinion of, and other comedians maybe don't even like it, but I like that joke. I do like that joke. It's a stupid joke, but I kind of like it because it's got David Bowie in it, and I'm a fan of David Bowie. I thought, how many jokes have got David Bowie in them?
Well, I'll tell you what puts that joke over the top and why it falls into the usable category is you do a very funny David Bowie.
I do a good David Bowie.
Well, now you're in. Now we're in.
David Bowie all day long. It's one of the things that I learned early on in comedy that you have to do David Bowie and also Sean Connery. Everyone in Scotland can do Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Sean. If you can do Sean Connery and David Bowie, you'll always work in the UK if it's the 1980s.
It's funny. David Bowie's so David Bowie, but nobody really has them in their arsenal of I do impressions of of David Bowie.
Well, I think that's what got me the late night show. I don't know. I think that it's a lot of people in Britain do it. I'm not the only one. And I wonder, if I'm honest, if I'm doing David Bowie or I'm probably doing somebody's impression of David Bowie that I've picked up somewhere along the line. Because that happens a lot, that you hear other people doing it and then you do it.
We would have that with SNL and Bush.
Sarah Palin.
Or whoever. Yeah. We do Dana Carvey or version of Bush or whatever. So it documents you out on the road, you putting together the set list, you executing the set list. How many dates did you do?
It was 60 dates on that tour. And the way I tour is very old fashioned. The way I used to tour, I'm not going to do it anymore, but the way I tour was, it's like an old rock band. I go out and get on the bus and just keep going. Like comics now, they go out and do Thursday, Friday, Saturday night and then go home. I don't do that. I don't like to do that. And I watched, because I kind of think that way, because I was in bands when I was a kid. I was a drummer in rock bands and punk rock bands when I was a kid. And I had watched documentaries on Netflix, pretty much Netflix. There was one about Rush, and there was one about Journey, and there was one about Anvil. And these are three bands that
Anvil. It's a great documentary.
It's a great story.
I love that documentary.
Yeah. But these three bands, I don't like either any of these bands. I don't like them at all. But I love the documentaries, particularly Rush is a band that I can't stand. But I watched the documentary, and I thought, these guys are awesome. I'm an asshole for not liking this band. And then I thought, well, this format is a great way for me to make television for people who hate my guts. I can make a show that for people that hate what I do, but still go, oh, okay.
Well,
is that where you were, Adam?
No, I find you infinitely affable.
And, oh, there you go. Well, that's good.
It's a good testimonial.
Yeah.
And I think...
I'm very interested in talking to you.
I think you're underrated in the looks department.
Yeah.
I think you're very handsome and you're affable. Carry on.
Yeah.
And we have a group of guys that somehow just make the good-looking dude list, and then guys who don't make that repeated list. And you should be on that list. You're tall. You got a great accent. You have great bone structure.
Thanks very
much. You should be on the good-looking guy list.
Agreed.
And I think
I don't make lists, though. I don't make lists of anything. I've this is my entire life. The only lists I seem to make are, you know, here's the list of pupils who are expelled. Here's the list of guys that are in trouble. I have always had, I feel, a very odd relationship with show business and with in particular Hollywood. And I think late night really accentuated that for me, because it is such a, at the time it was a fraternity, it was all guys, and it felt like it was a group of people who all kind of had a same thing in mind, and they had a same archetype for how it was done, and there was a collegiate feel to it, and I never felt part of that, and certainly the press never did. And I think what was lucky was that I was working for a guy who also felt that way about himself, which was Letterman. And because Dave owned the show, I was allowed to exist outside the kind of, you know, the group of people, that the acceptable norms, if you like, because Dave likes that kind of thing.
I thought of a joke that I like that no one laughed at.
Yeah.
Well, great. Let's hear it again.
Oh, yeah. I've never said it. That's what you need.
I've never said it before. I wish I could do impersonation. But when I did the last thing we did on Celebrity Apprentice is go out and do like a comedy roast, stand up, whatever. And I roasted Trump, which is weird because he was like standing right in front of me with his arms folded when I was roasting him. But I said, Arsenio Hall, I think I was on his team, and he brought me out, and I said, Arsenio Hall, I mean, what a talent, and also pioneer. I mean, this guy, first African-American on late night, he paved the way for the Craig Fergusons and the David Lettermans and the Jimmy Hill. I didn't name 19 white guys, and everyone just stood there and looked at me, and I was like... I'm making a joke about no black guys after Arsenio, and everyone's like, yeah, those are all guys on TV.
No.
Yeah.
What's funny about that? But
sometimes
didn't work.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Yeah.
I feel like that happens often to me.
It happens. It can happen. But I stand by the concept.
Well,
of
that's what you should do. Just because a joke doesn't work for anyone else in the world doesn't mean it's not a joke to you.
Yes.
It's still your joke, Adam, and you can have it.
It's my joke. It's like a bowel movement.
Yeah.
It may not mean much to others. It may not have a lot of others. Or confuse them. But it's mine.
Do your bowel movements confuse other people? Because now I do actually want to see one.
Only when I try to share it with them from the stage.
Do you know who wrote a lot about his bowel movements was Salvador Dali.
Really?
Yeah, he was fascinated, particularly towards the end of his life. He would do his morning poop and then write about it in his diary. Every morning I would write about...
It's genius.
Yeah, and he's got his own museum. He's kind of like you with this the Adam Carolla Museum here, except his is in Spain.
I did not know Salvador Dali did that.
Yeah.
So you also, are you familiar with the word winnow or winnowed as to winnow down?
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Just you.
Is that nobody else knows either.
To winnow something down.
To narrow
is that
it down.
Is that the thing you were
saying? It's the same as whittled down.
Yeah, well, why don't you just use whittled down?
You're right.
I'm sorry. Whittled is a perfectly acceptable word. Everyone knows what it is. The whole concept of language is communication.
If you're
using a word that nobody else knows the meaning of, I'm sorry, Adam, you're just not grasping the concept.
My argument was we should get rid of winnowed, but evidently already gone.
Oh, right. Good.
So you
winnowed me down.
You grow up. There's also kind of a dark side as well.
Alcoholism is a dark business.
Yeah. And contemplation of suicide. Tell us.
Kind of goes with it. I mean, I've always found alcoholism very confusing, particularly my own. I mean, I haven't had a drink for a long time, but I was going to say, if you don't know anything about alcoholism, but, you know, you all work in show business. You either are an alcoholic or you know one or you were raised by one.
I sat next to Dr. Drew for 10 years
talking about alcoholics.
The famous alcoholic.
Also, you know, I think I found...
I don't see eye to eye with Drew on a lot of that stuff, though.
Oh, well, we can talk about that. Yeah. I always just found it... I found it interesting that show business is just... there's two ways to ruin your career. You can either get fat or get drunk.
Right.
And... every gift from every producer is either a bottle of scotch or bag of muffins.
Right.
So I was like, what kind of message? Look, it should be a gym membership. But it's always either booze or carbs. Those are the only
that
two things
true.
They deliver.
Yeah, that is true. I think that, and everybody always says show business is really bad for alcoholism, but I don't think it's any worse than anywhere else. It's just people talk about it. No one invites, you know, mechanics on to talk about, you know, their alcoholism. You want to talk about mechanics. But
I you know, Danny Bonaducci, who I had the misfortune of working with for a year, said one thing that I found interesting. He said, you know, just talk about child actors going wrong. But he's like, most guys went to junior high with a bunch of guys who turn out to be junkies or fuck-ups or sure. thieves or whatever. And I go, yeah, all, half the guys I went to North Hollywood High with turned out to be strung out on something or got into trouble with the law. It's not just child right. actors. It's those are the ones you know. A lot of people have a lot of difficulties.
See, now I'm fascinated by the fact that, because I Googled you, obviously, before I came on today as well. And you going to school, and you brought it up, growing to school in North Hollywood High, right? And growing up around here. So I get the feeling that, like, my kids are – the show business is demystified to them. They have no real – it's no real shimmering thing to them like it was to me.
Sure.
And I imagine it's probably similar to you, right, that you grew up so close to it that it doesn't call you – it doesn't have the siren call in the same way. You end up in it, but it feels more like a natural career choice to someone who grows up here.
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it, but the first things first is I never like made the pilgrimage to come to Hollywood.
Right.
I just lived around here.
Right.
And Hollywood, you know, there's things where they show the Walk of Fame mm-hmm. or Grauman's Chinese Theater. It's like that's all stuff I'd pass in my pickup truck
right.
on my way to install some cabinets somewhere. So I didn't have any of that, and I did think of it as more of a vocation or sort of like a, what are you good at, what'll get you paid, what can't you do? I couldn't read or write, so all the sort of be a lawyer, be a doctor, be a something, that was all off the table for me.
Right.
So it was either carpentry or comedy. And I was already doing carpentry.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm interested you say you can't read or write. Was that a learning disability? Or
no, I didn't learn to read or write from zero. I didn't enter what would be called like sort of a proper school until the fifth grade. So I had no idea how to spell or read or write because
right.
I never learned from, you know, zero to 11 or 12 or whatever it was. And then at that point, from the fifth grade to senior year of high school, all I did was try to cover for the fact that I couldn't read or write.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, you know those movies where it's like, hey, Willie, it's the old-time janitor, you know, we got your papers have come in. And you go, I don't have my reading glasses.
Yeah.
You read it for me. Like, there was a lot of that.
Did you ever read a story by Somerset?
No.
Somerset Vaughan. called The Verger?
I've never read a story.
There's a great story by Somerset Vaughan called The Verger. It's about the verger of a church. This guy's been there for like 60 years. And the new priest comes in. The old priest dies. A new young guy comes in and says, okay, we're going to make some changes. I want you to fill in these forms. And he said, I can't fill in these forms. I can't read or write. He said, well, you can't be the verger of my church and not be able to read or write. So he fires the old fella. And the old fella's on the way home. He doesn't know what to do. This is a story that was written a while ago. And he passes a tobacconist. And he thinks, I'll get some, but it's closed. So he goes on the next street and then the next street, and he goes about five streets and there's no tobacconist. He thinks, well, I'll open a tobacconist. I've got a little money, so I'll open one tobacconist and all these streets that don't have one. And he opens up a store and it does really well, and he starts making a little money. So he starts walking around neighborhoods that don't have tobacconists and opening up tobacconists. Eventually, he's got a lot of money.
And is that a smoke shop?
Yeah, it's
tobacco
where you, buy, where you right. buy cigarettes.
Right.
And when he... eventually, his bank manager calls him in and says, we've got £1 million sitting here in a deposit account. He said, we should invest this money. He's like, sure. Okay, what do we do? He said, well, we just fill in these forms and we'll get started. He said, well, I can't fill in the forms. I can't read or write, just like he said to the priest. And the bank manager says, my God, man, you made $1 million and you can't read or write. What would you have done if you could read or write? And he said, I'd be the verger at St. Swithin's if I could read or write. So I think I love that story for the idea that You know, that that life isn't necessarily – the rules don't necessarily apply in the same way to everyone. I'm fascinated by the idea that you couldn't read or write and you become – this is a very communicative, heavy life that you've created for yourself.
Well, because I couldn't read or write, I tended to listen to everyone's stories.
Right.
And I also tended to – create my own stories versus get lost in other people's stories. So right. I was constantly trying to create stories versus I'm going to read a collection of other people's stories,
right.
Which I get. There's definitely some residual value from doing that. You just did it. You just said, here's a story about
right,
somebody
sure. Yeah.
And did it. But I tended to drift toward make all your own stories up. Sort of, I don't know, it's like I can't read music, so I'm just going to create my own songs.
Well, to drill down even further, probably why Adam drifted towards improv comedy as opposed to stand-up comedy. You know what I mean? Less to write down,
sketch.
Less to memorize, less to read.
Sketch.
Exactly.
Right.
That would be the worst.
Oh,
The worst ever. I'd be at the Acme Theater, and these guys were all college guys, and they were all smart guys, and they're all educated guys.
All these guys that were Oxford and Cambridge, and I say, look, Prime Minister, there's a chap coming in, and they'd rehearse and stuff. I could never do that.
They'd come walking in with a pile of papers, yeah. And they'd go, all right, I want to try out this sketch. And then they'd hand everyone their part, and they'd go, you're going to be the cop, and you're going to be the whatever, and everyone else would get their stuff, and I'd be feverishly like, I didn't bring my reading glasses. Where's my glasses? I'm 28. Where's my glasses?
My bifocals.
Yeah, where's my monocle?
So, sliding out from under a car.
I remember I would like have to underline all my stuff because I couldn't find it on the page. I'd have to read it, and they'd go, all right, here we go. We're going to start. And I'd be like, no, don't start yet. I have to read it 10 times.
I think it's an odd thing though, because being able to read the lines doesn't going to make you any good, you know.
Well, I these are all things that sadly I learned later in life. I'd be like people go, you should be a writer, and I'd go, I can't write. I don't know how to type.
They'd go, you're not a stenographer. Yeah, yeah,
they'd go. I go. The number one thing you need, I can't do. So how would I be a writer? And I, later on, of course, I learned it was the thoughts that were the important part of that.
Exactly. Barbara Cartland, who wrote hundreds and hundreds of romantic trashy novels, didn't write at all. She just had someone listen to what she said.
I now have that. I'm on my fifth book, and I have someone who just listens to what I say. So you grow up in a modest world. A million miles away from show business.
Yeah.
What are the early thoughts? I think I'm read here you're an apprentice electrician for a while after you left high school.
I think I'm from probably a very similar background to you. I'm from a very working class, blue collar background where show business is even more removed from show business than you, because I wasn't even geographically close. But I think what happened, I was very, very lucky in the timing, because when I was about 14 or 15 years old, punk rock happened. And because all the kids love music, everybody loved music, being in a band during the like mid to late 70s, early 80s was kind of like having a Twitter account now. Just everybody was in a band. You were in a band. If you weren't in a band, you weren't participating. It was everywhere. And so I started meeting people who were real musicians. I was a drummer, but there were people who could play the guitar or somebody who played the piano, and I was actually a pretty good drummer. So I started to meet better musicians and people who were in the arts. And because punk rock was it wasn't just about music, it was really more about fashion anyway, and music, and there was performance pieces. People would say, get up and do stand up between the bands while we move the equipment. I mean, that old chestnut. But that's how I got into it. I didn't go to comedy clubs. I was doing stand up in nightclubs, in music clubs.
Drew Carey show. How did that come about?
That was a straight up cash grab for me. what I did was I came here because I had gotten sober in 1992. And I thought, I want to do that thing that people do. I want to go to Hollywood and I want to see if I can do whatever people do here. I've since found out that what happens when people come to Hollywood is this: they either get what they want or they don't, and either way, it doesn't fix them, right?
Right.
You know, it just doesn't work. It's not here. But I came here looking for that thing, and I was going on auditions and failing and failing and failing, and not getting the job. And I went to, there was one audition I got, it was a very odd audition. They asked me to go on it. Do you remember the Brooke Shields show, Suddenly Susan?
Sure.
Yeah, she worked at a newspaper in San Francisco.
Right, and she had a friend who was a Hispanic, a Latino photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to go on audition for that part. And I was like, well, there's clearly been a mistake.
Sure.
Right? And my buddy who was in town at the time said, I said, I'm not going to go. That's just stupid. I'm going to turn up. Everyone's going to mock me. And he said, oh, what else are you doing, doctor? You needed surgery? Go on, just go. You never know. So I went to the audition, and I get there, and everybody looks like, you know, Antonio Banderas. There's all these handsome Mexican guys in there. And I'm like, and I get called in to do my thing in front of the producers and the Warner Brothers casting. And I do this Speedy Gonzalez Braveheart thing. I mean, I can't. It was very bad.
Little Bowie mixed in.
Oh, it was. And it was terrible, but we were having fun with it. And after the audition, Tony Sepulveda, who was the head of casting at Warner Brothers at the time, said, you know, that was really awful. And I went, I know, but, you know, I didn't want to be a jerk and cancel. And they said, no. We are doing a show where we're looking for a guy that can do an English accent, this new show, the Drew Carey Show. Can you do an English accent? And I said, si, senor, yes, I can. And that's how I ended up doing Drew Carey, because I auditioned to play the Mexican photographer on Suddenly Susan. And that's one of the reasons why I love show business.
Well, yeah. The notion that people would think they could steer that car from the back seat called show business, if everybody's story has nothing to do with what they planned or what they'd set their sights to on, and there's everyone sort of ended up in the place they wanted to end up, but the notion that you can get out a steno pad and chart it out is insane.
I think so.
It is. Yeah. And that's why the only answer is get up, get out, and go.
Yes, I agree.
That's
it. And that's why it's... But there is a sort of... There are opportunities that are put in place for some people that are not put in place for others, just like in any other business.
Sure.
And, you know, and I felt very strongly in the UK at the time when I was a kid there that... Once I had gotten into the idea I wanted to perform, everything was controlled by people in comedy. Everything was controlled by people who went to Oxford or Cambridge universities. It was all very like the way Ivy League would be here. And I felt like because I wasn't part of that, I didn't have a chance. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that's the way I felt. And that was one of the reasons why I came to America. So, you know, or came to Hollywood. It was my resentment of not getting enough, what I consider enough attention there, drove me here. But I think resentment is a pretty good fuel for a career in show business. I think it helps.
You know, being a little bit scared,
yeah,
and having a little bit of an axe to grind, and wanting to kind of keep up with the Joneses.
You know,
I have a comedy partner, Jimmy Kimmel, who's hosting the Oscars 2 times. So,
yeah, and he's good at it.
And I spend a bunch of time with the guy. And I don't mind a chasm between his career and my career, but I don't want it to be Snake River Canyon. I don't want to be hosting the porn awards and he hosts the Oscars.
Do you know what? The night Jon Stewart first hosted the Oscars, I was doing Tommy T's Steakhouse and Comedy Club in Pleasanton, North California. And I thought at the time, this is too much of a gap. This is too much. Although, nothing against Tommy T's, is a fine place to do comedy.
Pleasanton's a nice town.
Yeah,
it's pleasant.
It's pleasant, and they've got... Have you ever played Tommy T's?
Wait, is it Rooster T Feathers, or that's another place?
That's San Jose, right?
Yeah, you know.
Wait, it's in somethingville.
Pleasantville. No, Pleasanton. Pleasanton.
Well, Max Pat will figure out. No, I don't think I have.
Sunnyvale?
No, Sunnyvale. Yeah, is that Sunnyvale?
Rooster T Feathers, Sunnyvale.
Yeah. I've never had the honor of Rooster T Feathers.
No, Pleasanton is up farther north.
I've done I think I've done Looney Bins in Wichita.
Yeah. Oh, now that's my hometown.
Tommy T's.
Tommy T's is Pleasanton.
It doesn't exist anymore, but I know the terminal at the Burbank Airport on the Southwest flight that we'd hop onto to play unknown clubs all around the country.
Right.
would have a big picture of Jimmy, you know, late night, Jimmy Kimmel, and it's like literally a mural.
Yeah.
And so as they're going, Group C, who's in Group C? And I'm standing there, Group C, I'm passing under a giant picture of Jimmy.
We have pictures of it somewhere.
Wearing a tailored suit.
I remember talking to Jimmy, though, when I had, he was a guest on my old late night show after I had announced I was going. Mm-hmm. And he genuinely, and I could tell it was genuine, he genuinely couldn't understand why I wouldn't want to do this until they carried me out in a box. And I was like, because I don't want to do it. And well, I don't think he believed me.
I think that, and also I got the same when we stopped doing the Man Show. People were like, why aren't you doing a fifth season? I said, right. Because I don't want to do a fifth
right.
season. They go, are you? No, of course you do. Now, what's the real story? You know, no, there is no, people don't believe that you can walk away from a successful show in show business because the plan is, oh my God, you finally made it onto this bucking bronco that everyone gets bucked off of immediately. And you've been on for a long time now and you would never get off willfully. You're going to ride it as long as you can.
And what you do by walking away from something like that is you mess with their paradigm and you screw
yes.
it up for them. You because you're basically saying what they believe in is not true. It's like when people say, you know, when some rich person kills themselves and they say, if I had his money, I wouldn't.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, you would. It's, because it's not a, it doesn't do that. Money's great, but it doesn't do that. It doesn't fix that.
Well, it's sad because what people do is you do something that's semi-noble or shows character, which is you go, I've done this for 9 years or 10 years. That's enough, right?
Sure.
Man Show, we did 100 episodes. I'm like, that's enough.
Yep.
Time to do something else. And then people go, oh, they fired your ass, didn't they? And you go, no, I didn't. And they go, okay, but what's the real story?
Right,
and it's like,
that's
why?
Right.
The real story is you did something that they wouldn't do or they hadn't heard of people doing. But that doesn't mean you didn't do it.
Well, I got a lot of that in late night because the idea that when I first started in late night, people would say to me, do you want to take over from Letterman? And I was like, I've just started on this
right.
job where I'm working for David Letterman. The last thing I want to do is say, I'm coming to get you, Dave. Or like,
right.
And I didn't want to do it anyway. I didn't grow up with that idea that I wanted to be Carson or Letterman. It just wasn't part of my thought process.
Well, that's the part that's interesting because as we've chronicled on this show, Jimmy grew up wanting that. He
yeah.
wanted to
yeah, he
do
did.
That.
Yeah.
And I grew up wanting to do just a whole bunch of different stuff and maybe in show business. So to me, the thought is I've always discussed with people, I go, you know, well, let's break down what a bad job is.
Right.
And so people go, well, the guy worked 51 years at the same postal sorting facility in Arleta. He retired and he died 2 weeks later. And you go, oh, that's sad. Well, you go, why is it sad? And you go, because he went to the same place every day for 51 years. So everyone kind of gets that repetition sad part. But they don't ever really apply it to show business.
Right.
And my thing is if you do the same job for 25 years in show business, you do get paid and you get a lot of attention and you get a ton of positives, which would probably outweigh the repetition. But in my mind, the variety, that's the part that makes show business unique and fun. Like,
also, you have to, you know, you have to ask yourself what's enough. You know, like I had to ask myself at a certain point, what am I? I'm going to keep doing that because they'll give me more money. Because if I'm only doing this for money, and I get nothing against money, I want to get paid for what I do. I like money. It's nice to have money. But if it's only for money, I would do something that was more stable, that was the money was more guaranteed, that it was that I was maybe better at. I remember I did a corporate gig, like, you know, the kind of the sneaky thing that everybody does in show business that they don't talk about.
Sure.
But I was doing a corporate gig on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. That's just only about 3 months ago or something. And it was after trading hours and there was all these traders there and I'm standing on the CNBC raised platform trying to do stand up to all these people who
sure.
are corporate. And I said, you know, I feel like, do you guys get a lot of money? Are you all rich? Because I thought I was rich, but here I am.
Right.
You know, so when's enough?
Now, what would it sound like if David Bowie read the NASDAQ? Now,
today in trading, Amazon's gone up. Triceratops.
There's never
Triceratops. Then,
yeah, there's never. I mean, the money. It's interesting, but I think people assume the idea with show business is you go as long as they let you go, and so
that's one way.
When people retire, or want to do other things, or have other interests, people assume that show business pushed them out versus them leaving voluntarily, especially a job. You know, there's so much to do under the umbrella of creativity in show business. I just feel like, well, it's kind of interesting because as we circle back to Jimmy does go to the same place for work every day, but also produces tons of stuff outside that he's not in, and, you know, Crank Yankers and other, going to be doing other shows with Norman Lear and stuff like that. So you can go to the same job as I do podcasting and then be satiated by being involved with other endeavors as well. But I also kind of like the part where you're not sure what next year holds for you.
Yes, I think that's interesting. It's also, I think that for me, look, not everybody's the same. Some people, the idea of security is what they want all the time. I don't know, man. I think when I was drinking myself half to death in my 20s, I lost the idea that you know, life was a secure thing, that you could take it for granted. That I don't feel like that. I don't feel like time is limitless and I can go for as long as it will allow. I don't feel like that. I feel like I want to do stuff that engages me emotionally. I want to make a living. I'm not knocking the item. I'm so artistic. I don't care about money. That's bullshit. I care about making a living, but I don't want to do it. And I'm not saying that Jimmy isn't. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that people who do that job don't, you know, but I don't want to do it. And I think a lot of the times, particularly now with the way that social media or media is, that everybody has to think the same thing. And if you don't think the same thing as me, you're somehow wrong or mistaken. And the idea that I can have a different point of view that can be equally valid and correct it seems odd. Like if I say, I don't want to do that. Why? You're just saying that, like you said. You know, you're saying that because they fired you. Go, okay, well, if you want to believe that, that's fine.
I always believed you left. I mean, you were almost 10 years. Did you do 10 years?
Yeah.
10 years creatively is about right, you know.
I have to tell you, when I knew I was going to go, like once I had said to them, okay, look, at the end of this term, that's it, we're done. And everybody had agreed it, and the dust had settled. I started to love doing the show again because I knew it had an end.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I really enjoyed that last year because I knew there was a finite part of it. I wasn't going to have to keep doing it every night. And as the landscape has changed now, where I feel like I would have to participate in a style of comedy, I don't really know if I'd be able to do it.
Yeah, there's that part too. There's nothing worse than, I suppose when you have a regular job and they ask you to sort of do something that's outside of what you do, sometimes you do it or sometimes you're unhappy about it. But when they're asking you to do something comedically that you don't like,
yeah.
Sometimes I would have conversations with people where I'd go, I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm just saying I can't make it funny because I don't really want to do it.
Like right.
It's not speaking to me. It usually meant it wasn't funny, but I was trying to be magnanimous.
I used to always say that if I was going to let a writer go, I'd say, look, I'm just not talented enough to do your material.
Wow. So,
yeah.
I
get
can't.
That drop.
It's very benevolent.
It's the breakup version of it's not you, it's me.
It's me, yeah.
Well, I was saying with I don't like you. All right. Let me hit Zorro, and then we'll break and do some news. Zorro, Zorro.com. Find everything you need for any size business in almost any industry. Tools, equipment, safety, office and cleaning supplies, and more. Tons of stuff for electrical, plumbing, contracting, manufacturing, and more. Brands you know and trust, like Stanley and 3M and Milwaukee and Rubbermaid, just to name a few. Amazing customer service from real people based in the U.S. Fast, free shipping on orders of $50 or more. So if you have a home and you're taking care of stuff and you need products for cleaning and whatnot, or tools or whatnot, or you have a small business or medium or large business, you visit Zorro.com/Adam. Sign up for the Z-Mail. Get 15% off your first order. That's ZORO.com/Adam. Craig's going to hang in. We'll take a quick break. We'll do the news right after this.
Get your tickets now for Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. December 13th and 14th in Oxnard at Levity Live. In Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater on January 24th. And at Chicago's Park West on January 25th. Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
I'm honored that Mr. Ferguson likes that opening.
That's awesome.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
So starting off with some pretty terrible news, but really all over the place today. Police investigating Tuesday's shootout in Jersey City, New Jersey, now believe that the gunman may have specifically targeted the kosher grocery store where three people were killed. Police have identified the suspects, who are a 47-year-old man and a 50-year-old woman. The man was believed to be a former member of the Black Israelite movement, and religious writings were found inside the van they used to drive to the scene. The scene of the shooting was initially believed to have been chosen at random, but Jersey City's mayor said it was a targeted attack. The standoff, which lasted several hours, left six people dead, including a police officer and the two suspects. And now they believe that it was because of targeting this Jewish grocery store and the Black Israelite movement.
It's always interesting. You know, my theory is, what drives everybody? If you want to insult someone, you know, call them fat or ugly or dumb. But if you want to enrage them, then you have to shame them. Mm. That really shame like creates everything. Because I always think, what's with the Jews? What's everyone care about the Jews for? I'm from North Hollywood. I had a perfect Whitman sample box of cultures in North Hollywood High. I had white guys who were in the Valley, who's like my buddies, parents divorced, live in apartments. I had some Hispanic guys who lived like in the deeper Valley. Had some black guys bust in from the city, played on the football team. Sprinkling of like Asians and Eastern Asian types. And then there were the Jews. The Jews lived up in Hebrew Heights. They lived up in the hills, Laurelwood. They come down the streets, were all Donnas, Donna Dolores, Donna Pegita, Donna, mm-hmm. Donna, everything. And they came down. And the Jews, parents were together, got great grades, super well disciplined and mannered. And when we left North Hollywood High, my Jewish friends went off to Stanford and Cal, and my white Mexican friends went off to a construction site and picked up garbage. And I remember at the time going, those people have their shit together. It's not the school. It's them. We all went to the same school. Me and Ray and Chris are going to a construction site and picking up garbage for $7 an hour. And Robbie and Alex Arado are heading off to Cal Berkeley in Stanford. And I remember thinking, they must be doing something right. But I didn't have the impulse to throw a Molotov cocktail through their window. I wanted to emulate them. I thought they're doing something right, and I got to figure out how to bring that. Now, it's too late for my family, but when I start a family, I want to do it like the Jews. And my wife, Lynette, her dad said, marry a Jewish guy. Like, they're better. They stick around. They work a little harder. They're a little more into education, stuff like that. So why the Jews? You know, it's like, why? It's like they're not physically imposing. They're not whatever. And I realized, they show up. They get together, they become successful, and smart people recognize that and try to emulate it, and weak, angry people want to burn it down. That's my take on why the Jews. Where is this coming from? Why does it still exist? How historically, what happened? Why is there a through line here? I don't find them, you know, it's like no one ever said, oh, that guy's as annoying as a Jew. Like, there's no adages. It's like they get together, they do well, and all you can really do is kind of sit there and go, I fucking wish my family did that.
And yeah. There's no stereotypes about Jews?
There's Jews. There's Jew stereotypes. It's about, you know, money and, you know, but if you think about the stereotype, it's right up there with black guy having a big dick, like, right. You know what I mean?
Too
like
successful.
Being good
too
with
rich.
Money or, yeah. You know, whatever. I'm just saying, I think as I look at the sort of psychological, sociological, why the Jews kind of thing, I think the success breeds envy and then anger and resentment and then shame.
Right.
And then you can deal with that by either looking in the mirror or trying to burn it down.
Right.
And a lot of people want to burn it down.
Yeah. The only reason I know what black Israelites are, who they are, is because when I lived in New York, a lot of screaming in Times Square from yes. black Israelites. And that was the only time I didn't know what, I was like, oh, black Israelites, this sounds great. I'm Jewish. I'm from Kansas. I found my people. They are not my people. They do very much do not want to be my people.
They also made it to Washington because that's where that whole thing with Nicholas Sandman and the old elderly.
That's right.
They were the element that got sort of cut out of that, is they were with the Indian tribes guy and the yelling and blah, blah, blah. That's they're spreading out. Sad.
Well, Bill Cosby's bid to overturn his sexual assault conviction failed Tuesday when an appeals court upheld the verdict. But he was very remorseful. Just kidding. The comedian's rep blasted the move, saying, quote, "This news of the Superior Court denying Mr. Cosby's appeal is appalling and disappointing. It does show the level of corruption that resides in the judicial system of Pennsylvania."
Yeah, attack the system.
The statement calls Cosby's conviction...
Another black guy being railroaded.
That's right.
Being right from the... stage to prison pipeline, or how's this work? Another poor inner city black guy just getting carted off to the prison and locked away for no reason.
He did say that it was a political scheme to destroy America's dad. It ends by saying Mr. Cosby remains hopeful and he stands behind his innocence. Cosby is serving 3 to 10 years for the assault of Andrea Constan in 2004.
He should choose his words more carefully, you know, standing behind and turning it over.
Turn the other cheek.
Got into this
all stuff you do if someone was passed out and you're trying to have sex with them.
Yeah.
We establish early on that words matter.
They sure do.
Mm-hmm.
And so do actions, because the man who butt-slapped a reporter on live TV has issued an apology. I don't know if you saw it. I will show it to you. Alex Bazargian stood on the roadside reporting from the weekend Savannah Bridge Run when runner Tommy Calloway slapped her on the butt as he jogged by. Now, she stops mid-report to look in utter disbelief. It almost feels like a scene from a movie. Her reaction is so pure and so horrified. I'll show it to you in the studio.
You can't stand
here.
In front of a 10K over a bridge and not expect to get smacked in the butt.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's on her.
Does everybody know that?
She's wearing a revealing outfit.
Yeah, big construction vest.
It's inviting.
Inviting
outfit, as I learned from watching TJ Hooker.
Watch her expression once she gets smacked.
Not expecting that. People also dress up in costumes for this bridge run, so it's very exciting. People get really excited for this bridge run.
So she's trying to get herself back on track, but she is
slapping the ass is totally in context of that situation. You get on camera, everyone is running past you, doing something, throwing their hands in the air. Slapping ass is sort of lateral move from throwing your hands in the air or whatever. One guy went to put his arm around her or something.
Well, she has thoughts about it.
I want to hear them, and then I'll tell her to shut up because this is Zero Burger. I was on PCH. I've never told you this story. I was riding a 10 speed on PCH a million years ago. I was like 22, maybe 19. And I was stopped at a signal like where Pepperdine is. And it was a red signal. And I was just sitting there on my bike wearing like my bike shorts. And a group of like guys on hogs were coming up PCH. It's like old guys, you know, 15, 20 guys with bikes. And they all had their old ladies on the back. And I was just sitting there with my, you know, tight 19-year-old hiney wearing my tight cycling shorts, just sort of stationary, maybe presenting, maybe.
It was inviting outfit.
I was inviting.
Inviting outfit.
And the first, The gal, I think it was just sort of first in line as they were going past me and turning right, just put her hand out and slapped me on the ass. And then, of course, it just became kind of cards in the spokes. You
good
know,
game, like, good game.
Yeah, the chicks behind her went, all right, I see what we're doing here.
Two, four, six, eight.
This is funny. This is funny. A little slap shot move where, like, they went by the opposing bench with the stick up and this said, and I just was there and I remember thinking, that's funny.
But
it's
did,
funny. Like,
did
I get what's going on.
Was it televised? Were you trying to report on something?
There was a crew there.
Crew.
Yeah, I don't
know that I was the subject of what they were filming, but I can't say that I wasn't.
We'll
I don't
know.
Look on the internet, Max Pat. No, Max Pat's looking confused. No, it's not on, not on camera. It's still joke and it's stupid and it's whatever.
I thought of myself in this situation because I've done, you know, radio, whatever, and I'm so used to this stuff. It doesn't bother me. I'd laugh it off, whatever. But if I was her, I'd probably be a little embarrassed. I'd have to sort of like collect myself and
something,
keep going.
But she's outraged or whatever.
Well, let me tell you exactly
hold
what
on.
She
do you
said.
Think the fucker and the pussy guys are outraged? Like, do you think the fucker and the pussy guys are like, hey man, you crossed the line. Now our move is we run in front of the camera person and yell fuck them in the pussy.
That's our move.
But we don't put hands.
That's right.
Okay? That's too much. That's too much.
That's too much. You've crossed the line.
Far.
This is the conversation they have in the van. When they rob a bank and the one guy shot the guard.
What was that?
You shot the guard.
That was part of the plan.
We're just robbing a bank. Why'd you shoot the guard? By the way, they should never be that surprised. We all ran into the bank with
carrying guns,
loaded guns, and then we're chewing out the guy who used his gun.
The option was on the table.
Come on, man. Now it's murder one. It's like before, we're just going to spend 40 years in jail. Now we're spending 50 years. Like,
this
would agree to rob
Chris,
a bank.
This would be hard to find, but in the movie Heat, when that happens, the bank robbery, and like, why did you do that? Why did you shoot the guy? And he goes, I had to get it on, man. Had to get it on.
They do it in every bank movie where
he
someone
had to
gets
get
shot.
It on.
The three dudes who thought it was a good idea to rob a bank with a gun are now judging the guy who shot the
person.
Well,
guy always falls
apart.
That
shaming
him. That's
right.
Right. Well, Tommy Calloway, that's the guy, the offender, serves his church as a youth minister. He has asked to be forgiven. But Bazargian filed a report with the Savannah, Georgia police. She tweeted, you violated, objectified, and embarrassed me. No woman should ever have to put up with this. Do better. She has since appeared on CBS This Morning. And when asked whether or not she's open to hearing what Calloway has to say, she said this.
Oh, I could never
what
host the show.
What is most important here is that he took my power, and I'm trying
fuck
to take that back.
See,
and
she's taking it back.
Whether I am open to it or not, I want to take my time with that.
Power.
I think what it really
magical
comes down
farts,
to is that
and he gobbled them
he
up with his hand.
Helped himself to a part of my body.
By the way, this is why I could never have this gig because he took my power. Yeah. And then he helped himself to a part of and the healing process. Yeah. I'd always be like, what do you mean he took your power? He slapped you on the ass. Here, watch this. Slap me on the ass. See if you take my power. Let's see how this works. No, you chose to be a victim. He didn't. He did something that was playful, running on a bridge. You chose to couch it as he took my power. There is no taking of power when you slap somebody in the behind. And this is that generation I'm talking about. She's part of the self-esteem thing. She feels she has no. She doesn't realize that it had nothing to do with her. That's what people don't understand. This is a random person holding a microphone looking at a camera. He doesn't know who she is. It's not a personal thing. It seems super personal. It's the opposite of personal. It's what you would do. It's like egging a car that goes by when you're a kid. You don't have anything against the person or the car. You're egging cars. That's right. How it works. He didn't. Well, let me hear her again and her nuttiness. And by the way, this is stupid. People have got to fucking conduct interviews like human beings. At least ask some questions.
What is most important here is that he took my power, and I'm trying to take that back. Whether I am open to it or not, I want to take my time with that.
File the police report?
I think what it really comes down to is that he helped himself to a part of my body.
Any other non-news that we can do? What else can we grunt at that's a zero story? This is a zero fucking burger. She should not be on. She probably shouldn't be on her local station, much less CBS News doing a national spot.
It did.
By the way, what do interviewers do now? Just sit there and grunt?
Gail King and
took your power.
The guy.
Yeah, he stole your power because he slapped you in the ass when he ran past you on a 10K. Okay.
It did make me wonder if she would have been a part of the old Conway and Whitman show when we all got in our underwear and weighed ourselves to see how many pounds of show we were. Something tells me, she would have been down. And filmed it.
I wonder how much we all weigh.
Well, she can never be whole again.
Oh, this is many years ago.
I mean, come on.
I hardly tipped the scale.
You want to see that scene from Heat?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a scene like that in Point Break, too. There's a scene like that in every movie.
Beginning.
The payoff, this guy says, get it on. Got to get it on. Then they all meet at the diner after the botched robbery.
Val.
Sizemore.
Wow, that's some going back a bit.
He was making a move. I had to get it on.
Smashed his head.
Oh,
that's good.
Peak De Niro.
Yeah, peak De Niro.
Did you see have you seen The Irishman?
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. There's just one scene in it, though, where I went, You know the bit where De Niro beats the guy?
The fight scene outside the market.
Yeah, it bumped us
so
a little bit.
So awkward.
I was like, when the guy's going, my hand. I'm like, please.
Oh, Adam, you haven't seen
it
yet, have you?
No.
Chris, you find that scene, it's making the rounds of social media because we've brought it up a few times now.
Yeah. Is it really?
It's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. Because look, if you're going to do all that, can we just use a young body double?
Yeah. He's supposed to be 35 years old.
Yeah.
He seems a little stiff.
Yeah.
A little arthritic.
I don't want to be ageist about it, but, you know, old guys don't generally beat up people.
No. They will beat up other old people on occasion. Yeah. I feel like if I was in the van on the way to commit the armed robbery of the bank, I would lay the groundwork, which is I'm not going to shoot anybody for the sake of shooting somebody. But if I do shoot somebody, I would hope you would not judge me in the inevitable van ride home.
I would even go further than that. I would say, look, like, and we're in the van on the way to the room. I say, look, we all have guns.
Right.
We should probably have a policy about when and if we're going to use the guns. Let's discuss it afterwards. And, you know, and think about it then. Let's discuss now, how are we approaching the gun thing? Are the bullets in the guns? Are the bullets real? Are we going to fire a bullet into the roof just to scare people? Or what are we doing with the guns?
Well, Tim, I've thought about this long and hard. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a security guard. He's going to be scared shitless and immediately comply.
Right.
But from watching enough of these types of movies that we may or may not be in, unclear whether we're actually robbing a bank or making a movie about it, so we'll break down the fourth wall and sort that out later.
Right. We'll do that later.
We'll look and check if it's real money. If it's fake money, then we're making a movie.
We'll do it in the diner.
But anyway, Tim, I digress. I'll tell you one thing. It's two things I can guarantee. I can guarantee that the guy in uniform is not going to be – he's the least of our worries.
Right.
There is going to be an off-duty cop civilian clothes.
I'm glad we're
talking
about this.
He's going to be wearing a members-only type jacket.
Right.
And he's going to be lying on the ground. And at some point, he's going to reach back and go for his piece.
So did we shoot him?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
First, he has to be noticed by another person who's lying down as well, who's looking at him going, don't do it.
And maybe somebody slides out from under one of the teller things, and it's like maybe Angelina Jolie.
We have her on a mechanic scraper.
Right, okay, right.
He comes out from under the teller's thing.
I know I'm just the wheel man here, but I'm glad we're figuring this out now, not inside the bank, because that's a mess.
And I'm glad... You were one of the best second story men in the business. You're fair to middling at being a wheel man.
Well, I mean, I did injure my left ankle, which is why I can't do the second story thing anymore.
Yeah, and I'm sorry we're not robbing a two-story bank. You know, they have a high mezzanine, but there is no second floor up there.
Very few two-story banks out there anymore.
Yeah, now, I've calculated exactly how long it's going to take the cops to get here.
Right.
Even though I'm not basing that on anything, because the cop car could drive past.
How can you calculate
that? We have, gentlemen.
Once the silent alarm gets triggered.
We have 1 minute and 41 seconds before the first patrol car rolls.
Right, okay.
We need to be in and out, and no one ever raises their hand and goes, What if there's a cop across the street eating a sandwich?
Yeah, like, what if he's making Starbucks, a deposit? Like,
how exactly did you work this out? Like, how many dry runs did you go on where you tripped the silent alarm?
How many bank robberies did you observe?
All right.
What is the average?
Now, I want to tell you all this. This is our second to last caper. There's a bigger one later that I don't want to get into right now.
All right.
But we've all come out of retirement
just
for our second.
Just one after this.
A bigger one, okay. But this will be second.
This will be a second.
Penultimate. I think they call that.
Jinx.
You owe me a Coke, yeah. Right?
After the robbery. After the robbery.
But do you know the word winnow?
Hey, if you got a minute and 41 seconds, I can run and grab a Coke real quick.
Come back. I'll put it in a sentence. Do not winnow your bullets down into the body.
I thought we weren't going to talk about winnow. Winnow hasn't been around for a long time.
Oh, no.
I don't want to talk about winnow. We don't talk about winnow.
You're
he ain't here no more.
It's spelled differently.
Oh,
you're thinking about a different guy.
A different winnow?
Different guy.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
All right. You're thinking about a
Bob Winnow.
Tom Cruise movie from the 80s at Ron Howard?
Oh, yeah.
It's a Willow.
A Willow.
Val Kilmer. Yeah.
I'm making a joke. Yeah. All right. It didn't work. I won't do that one anymore.
It's all right.
I'll do it in a Bowie voice.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Oh, Brian's going to get a lot of mileage out of that. All right. Let me hit Castrol, and then we'll move on. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep the metal parts from rubbing and robbing. Three times.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Three times stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading full synthetics. It's the Edge. It is Castrol Edge, everybody. All right, Gina, what else?
Well, Time Magazine has chosen Teen Climate Change activist Greta Thunberg as the 2019 Person of the Year.
What?
The magazine's editor-in-chief, Edward Felsenthal, made the announcement Wednesday morning on the Today Show and revealed the magazine's cover, which features the 16-year-old Swedish girl. She's the youngest recipient of the honor.
Where's she from? She's from
Sweden,
I think. Yeah.
All right,
Certainly in the news, the most impactful person.
Are you familiar with Jeremy Clarkson? Got into a lot of trouble talking about
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets into trouble.
He gets into trouble a lot. Usually just before a new grand tour comes out, but he said that she should go home. She's scaring the other kids, which I think was the wrong thing to say.
I always laughed about. Now let's see, Bono. He's Irish, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
And I used to.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
I used to laugh all the time that Bono.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Bono would always be here, like, kind of lecturing us on famine and world and whatever. And I always would be like, what if I just took Bob Seger and sent him to Ireland and he'd just fucking get all sanctimonious and lecture you people all day? How would it fucking feel? Because that's what it feels like to me. And then I'd like to take a precocious 16-year-old and go to Sweden, as that what you're on, and just fucking lecture them. Just go there and lecture them on stuff. Just go get all sanctimonious on their ass. Because I feel like we live in the United States. Our carbon production is down. We're doing less carbon.
We're
than,
winnowing it down.
We're winnowing our
away. Good choice.
We're doing less carbon than we were the year before. And I think we did less than the year before that. Now, the people that need the lecture, that's India, that's China. Those people are upping their carbon game. So why do we become this place where everyone just lands in lectures? You know what I mean? Like, whether it's a world war or carbon, maybe we're on the happy side of this. Just go to fucking somewhere else that needs a lecture and go lecture there. You can't go to China and lecture. You'll get fucking thrown in a gulag or work camp or something. You can't go to these other places.
Are you saying there's no Adam Carolla podcast in China?
No, they're not lecture ready.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The irony of our country is you can come here and call us anything you want, say anything you want, and then just go about your way. You go to some of these other nations and do that, you come home in a fucking box. Or you come home in a catatonic state like...
out of warm beer.
Yeah, out of warm beer did. So it's funny. We become the easiest place to lecture because we're the safest place to lecture, but we're also the people that need the least lecturing. But we get the most lecturing because nobody gets blown up or gets a shoe thrown at them.
Do you know, I've noticed something about you over the years. I've studied you. And as you're aging, you're getting a little more Gilbert Gottfried than you used to be.
No.
I tell you, this is the greatest country in the world.
Xenophobic Gilbert Gottfried.
I have to tell you, I am getting a little more Gilbert Gottfried as well. As you get older, you turn into Gilbert Gottfried. Well, that's the Everman.
To be fair to him, when he...
Oh, come on. When he was, why?
When he was 30, he was 75. It makes sense that we would all turn into that as the years wear on.
He was the first comic I ever saw in Montreal at Just for Laughs, and all he was doing was going, I hate this place. It's covered in maple syrup. The minute you get off the plane, maple syrup. I'm sliding off it all over my ass. It's maple syrup.
Wow.
Yeah. Sometimes jokes don't work.
I got to tell you, between Gilbert and David,
that's not a bad Gilbert. I've never tried doing it before, but it's pretty good.
You have an ear, my friend. It's an interesting thing. Gina has the same thing.
Thank you.
Are you a musician, Gina?
No, I just like to mimic people.
I think it's a musician thing. I thought it was a musician thing.
Remind me of Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, well, that's Elliot Gould, right?
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do one more, Gina.
All right. Well, let's lighten things up a bit. Looking for something different to wear to your Christmas party, and we have one coming up. Forget those stupid, ugly Christmas sweaters. Now, what's really in fashion for the ladies?
Maybe I could get Kid Rock to go to Ireland and lecture.
They would embrace it.
Better than Bob Seger.
Open arms.
Yeah. What do you want to say, kid? You make a fair point. No, you do. That's true. Here. Now, why do they call you kid if you're 50? It's just a question. It's just a fair question.
The reindeer boob sweater. It is a trend sweeping the nation.
Whoa.
And while this new festive fashion might not be right for everyone's office party,
ample.
Is not stopping people from giving it a try. It's sold on Etsy.
Can I say this? Yeah. Like, call me old fashioned, but I miss the old days where Santa was just doing cocaine on a sweater.
That's right. Just like, the lines.
I'm a little more traditional.
Yeah.
You harken back?
Just as I get older, I get a little more traditional.
Yesteryear.
You have kids.
That's sure.
You want Santa doing rails versus boob reindeer.
It's just offensive. So it's the reindeer boob sweater. It's the brainchild of mom Sherry Wiseman. She came up with it. She sells it on Etsy under the Your Sassy Grandma store. And the sweater comes with a hole in it and some cutouts, a little red nose, some googly eyes, a wreath. And you can decorate your own boob with a reindeer accoutrement.
I would be interested in buying a pair of pants with a similar theme.
Yeah.
She came out with something similar. I don't think it's going over as well.
Yeah.
Gina, I would suggest one of these for you.
For the Christmas party?
In your ample bosom.
Okay.
Yes. And I would also suggest, you know how, you know, Christmas comes and goes, and you pass that house in April, and those Christmas lights are still up, and you judge?
They can't let go.
There'll be no judging you.
Do you promise?
Far from it.
You just take this right on into 2020.
All through the year. Yeah. July.
Well, look, and then at a certain point, you get closer to Christmas than you are.
And at that point.
Right? And now you just leave it out.
That's good.
You know, and leave the lights up.
Right.
There's no difference between the lights being up and your boob being out.
You promise you won't judge? Come March.
No, I won't
judge.
And listen, hold on. I'm not a weirdo. Okay. If like that boob falls asleep or something, you can use and swap it out for the other boob. Like I'm not gonna be like, hey, what happened to the right boob?
Right.
Wait. They can fall asleep?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's news to me.
Yeah, I didn't.
I'm not a boobologist. I study them
on
the internet.
Is that a doctor thing?
I'm assuming
that's a degree involved.
No,
or should I say Dr. Carolla?
It's called a boobologist.
I'm saying. Maybe it doesn't want to be exposed to the elements.
Right.
Maybe you spill barbecue sauce on it or something. You know what I'm saying? Swap out the other boob for the Rudolph boob.
Okay, that might be part of my resolution.
All right, let's bring it on, please.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Gina Grad. That was the news.
Boobology.
Gina Grad.
That's going to be up there with leave the jokes to Adam, right?
Yeah, why don't you leave the joke to Adam?
That'll be useful.
We're going to use the shit out of that.
Well, that's fine. I'll sign a release for it before I go. Absolutely no charge for it at all. I'm saying the opposite of what's true for comic effect.
All right, let me hit Geico last but not least. Geico, you got a bunch of stuff to do. How about you save a bunch of money on your auto insurance at geico.com? 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money. Put it in your pocket. Be the most rewarding thing you do all day at Geico. That is geico.com. Just go to geico.com, spend a couple of minutes, and save a whole bunch of money on auto insurance. All right. Shelby American, my doc, is up on Netflix if you want to watch it. If you want to get the Blu-ray, you can get that at Chassis, Chassy. And there's a lot of extras there, so check it out. Hobo Fabulous, very funny 6-part series, mixing stand-up and behind the scenes. It's interesting to see that life and get a bird's eye view of what that life looks like. TheCraigFergusonShow.com is where you can go, the website. Also, if you want to see Hobo Fabulous, go to Apple TV, Amazon, Google Play. It's on demand as well. I recommend it highly. Craig, you got to come back soon because there's so much to talk to with you.
I would love to come back because, as we all know, sometimes jokes don't work.
And Crank Yankers back on TV. Check that out. Get our newsletter, Carolla Newsletter. Sign up at AdamCarolla.com. Laughs with Bald Brian. Yeah. All the money's going to the Cancer Foundation. It's stupid. Yep, cancer. 2.5 hours of stand-up for under $5. And Oxnard Levity Live, me doing stand-up this weekend until... Oh, coming up, by the way, Milwaukee and Chicago. Pabst Theater and Park West as well. So go to AdamCarolla.com for all you need. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Craig Ferguson, Gina Grad, and Bald Brian. Say it. Mahalo.
Sometimes jokes don't work.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 888-634-1744. Get your tickets to see the Ace Man and Adam Carolla is Unprepared this weekend in Oxnard at Levity Live. Tickets for that show and all others are at AdamCarolla.com.
Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is easy. It's completely legal. And it's the best way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Not sure what you're waiting for. You can be rolling in a matter of moments. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices. Do it today, including your phone and Roku and Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, and anywhere else you stream. And also, don't forget about my channel, Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y, Chassis Channel. Number 501, it is the best. It is Pluto TV.